G7, number 6A.
We go on to the next four chapters. We always take four as a block, so to say. And the next four chapters are the Christ chapters. And this includes first the chapter on animal magnetism, unmasked. We have here as a title or as an epitome for it, what is good and what is evil. The great question, what is good, what is evil? Can anyone who does not know the definition of God know what is good and what is evil? Nobody can, because that is the cause for good, and therefore its opposite is evil. Therefore, we cannot start with the sense what is good, what is evil, do good, or you should be thinking in a good way and in a scaling way. What is good, what is evil? That can only be answered after the chapter on spiritualism, because the chapter on spiritualism has introduced the term idea, or the concept of idea. An idea is always an idea of God, and therefore that alone can show us what is reality. Therefore, right afterwards, after spiritualism, must come the chapter on animal magnetism, which says, look here, all that comes from God is good. All that does not come from God is evil. No matter if you like it or if you don't like it, that doesn't matter. So it is independent of our human conception of good and evil. That's why there is so many discussions going on, what is good, what is evil, because nobody has a standard of what is good and evil. Only then, when we have defined God, can we really see that which comes from God is idea, and that is good. Everything else must be considered as evil. That's a great question, because at that moment we can already define really what the reality is, what man is. We can define man from that standpoint and see that what we call man from the human standpoint, is only an imagination. She calls it only an imagination. It's dependent on the power of imagination. It's the effect of illusion. It's faith in esoteric magic. It's an unreal concept of the so-called mortal mind. So all that constitutes our concept of man and reality, whereas if we have gone through the first four chapters and come up to the chapter on spiritualism, there we know that only that which comes from God is reality, and therefore it's of the nature of the true man. So here the chapter, Animal Magnetism, is defining reality, the reality of something. There is only one reality, Mrs. Eddy shows here, namely divine science is separate from halfway impertinent knowledge. What we usually entertain is halfway impertinent knowledge. We think we know what is good and what is evil. We know exactly what the politician should do and what he shouldn't do. We know it. He doesn't know it. We know everything. According to my opinion, this should be done and that should not be done. And there are only 5 billion opinions in the world who know what should be right and what is wrong. Yes. So we get here a wonderful standard, and the core of that chapter is perhaps in the simple statement which she makes, that mind science is of God, working out the purposes of good only. It's the maximum of good. So that God and his idea, now we come back to God and his idea. You remember, spiritualism has introduced the term idea. Now, all God and his idea is alone good. So simple is it. But it's simple in statement, it's not so simple in doing it, in living it, in sticking to it and working from that standpoint. So we can see that the infinite God and his idea, Mrs. Eddy says, the all in all is really the maximum of good. So that everything which is not deduced from God and his idea is not good, is evil. That gets us away from a human concept of good and evil, and so we have a good starting point for the Christ idea, because the Christ is always that which comes from God, and therefore is a deduction from God, and only that which is a deduction from God is the really working out the purposes of God. It's a Christ idea at work, and we should only trust that. So again, it's very simple, really, the deduction that Mrs. Eddy makes, but very strict in its deduction. Change the standpoint and you have it. If you change your standpoint and from mortal mind to the divine mind and begin to deduce from the divine mind, then you know that all the manifestations that are being manifested are good, are the maximum of good. So we have here the first starting point in those four chapters, that we know what is good and what is evil. That's a very big point. If we know that, we come to the next chapter, to the chapter Science, Theology and Medicine, which is a terrific chapter. So perhaps another note on animal magnetism before we start with the sixth chapter. You see, animal magnetism is a very important question in Christian Science, because there's a whole chapter on it, because Mrs. Eddy was very hot on it, that we would handle animal magnetism, that we don't shut our eyes to animal magnetism. But though important it is, we have to be aware that we don't deal with it in the wrong way. Mostly it is a question that we fight animal magnetism. That's naturally animal magnetism in the highest potentiality. If we fight animal magnetism, then we make reality of it. The moment we fight against something, whatever that against is building up a duality. It's building up a dualism in our consciousness, and not what Mrs. Eddy really wants, namely that we have only the only and the one being. So we have to see what handling animal magnetism means. It is not fighting against it. It's not trying to destroy animal magnetism. If we try to destroy it, we consider it as something. The moment we consider evil or error as something that has to be destroyed, we are not really on the right track. What Mrs. Eddy rather would see is what you call annihilate, which has much more the meaning that we see that we make nothing of. Annihilate, making nothing of animal magnetism. Not really by shutting our eye to it, but seeing that it can be nothing, that it must be nothing, that it's just an illusion. And therefore, we handle animal magnetism really by really throwing on that situation the whole divine mind and its infinite manifestation as idea. Then we have only one realm, namely mind and mind's manifestation. That is handling animal magnetism. Not to fight it as if it would be something, but as seeing that it cannot be something. In this way, we really get rid of that thought. So you can see something which perhaps one forgets also very easily in the life of a Christian Scientist, that we talk a lot about animal magnetism. If something goes wrong, we say this is animal magnetism, and then there's a crisis, that's animal magnetism. If people are not nice to us and are nasty to us, that's animal magnetism. Everything that we don't like is animal magnetism. Now, that's actually not what we should do. What we should do is to see that animal magnetism is in us. If I feel that somebody is nasty to me or is playing tricks on me, or that the situation is nasty to me or plays tricks on me, I must not see animal magnetism in that person, in that situation. I must see it in me, that in me I have a wrong standpoint. I don't have in me that standpoint that mind and its idea are working constantly out the maximum of good. If I don't have that standpoint, that's animal magnetism in me. It's never out there. It's never out there. But we like to have it out there. It's much easier to be a jolly good fellow and to be a real nice man if the other one is really the culprit. That's so easy. But the culprit is within us, that we don't take the right standpoint. That's handling animal magnetism. So really, when she said there is no animal magnetism, then it seems nearly a contradiction to say you have to handle animal magnetism. How can you handle animal magnetism if it is nothing? How can you handle nothingness? Well, you can handle it. And that's the point. We handle it by filling our consciousness with the totality of good, with the maximum of good, with taking the standpoint of the one mind and its manifestation, of not deviating from that standpoint of the capitalized term. That's how we handle magnetism as being nothing. Because then we take away the cause of so-called animal magnetism, the source of so-called animal magnetism. We don't really fight the phenomena of animal magnetism. We really see that it has no phenomenon of animal magnetism, that cannot exist. Of course, did I put it intelligent enough to show that handling animal magnetism is really filling our thought so full with the idea of mind and its manifestation, with love and love's manifestation, that there is nothing to be seen or felt or taken cognizance of that is not of the nature of God. Then we have handled animal magnetism in us. Don't handle animal magnetism out there. The world and the people universe is not animal magnetism. If we have a people universe out there, we have made it. It's in our consciousness, and we have to go back to our consciousness. Just as Jesus, as he said, Jesus saw in science a perfect man. That's it. That's our standpoint. So if we see in science a perfect man, we cannot see something else. Then we handle animal magnetism. So let's be aware of that point. Because only if we do that, if we see that animal magnetism has to be handled within us by taking another standpoint, we have built the bridge to the sixth chapter. The sixth chapter we have here summarized as saying, in science, we reason from God. Now, this is the important chapter, that sixth chapter, so to say, the pillar on which the science of Christian Science rests. It is that chapter which says, look here, you have to make that standpoint definitely, that you change from the human to the divine mind. It's what I wanted to bring out with that little pamphlet that you received a few months ago or so, The Necessary Change of Standpoint. That's a small pamphlet, but the content of it is super important, I would say. It reflects the sixth chapter standpoint and is the basis from which we go out. You see, only if we go out from God, I don't like to call it God, if we go out from the infinite principle, from that, then we are sure that we can deduce properly to the right idea. If we go out from that, it needs a gracious preparation. It is interesting that Mrs. Eddy would show right at the beginning of that chapter that what she had discovered as Christian Science is something that was the outcome of what she calls a gracious preparation. What was her gracious preparation? That what we were discussing together in the first five chapters. That was her gracious preparation. You could think, if we would think humanly scientifically, then we would say, well, a human scientist would say, if I present a textbook, then I start out by giving first the principle of that subject. And I would start out here in this case on Christian Science, I would start out and say, I write to you a textbook on Christian Science, which rests on what? Which rests on the divine principle. And I explain to you what is God first. Without knowing what God is, you can't deduce from God, you can't have a science from God. And therefore, at one time, Mrs. Eddy put that chapter as the first chapter in the textbook. And one could easily understand that, because that seems to be humanly logic. Divinely, it was not logic, because what she discovered was a revelation. And for a revelation, one needs a clear window pane through which that revelation, that light can go through. And therefore, she could not accept, she would not be able to accept a revelation if she would not have been prepared for it. That's what I wanted to show the last up to now, that those first five chapters are absolutely necessary for us to imbibe and to live, or else there is no ground in which a seed can grow. Therefore, later on, she put that chapter as the sixth chapter. And that's spiritually right. That makes also the difference between ordinary classical orthodox sciences and Christian Science. Orthodox classical science you can learn with your brain, with your intellect. No matter who you are, how you behave. No matter what is your human standard. Doesn't matter. You can take the worst sinner and he can really be quite a big mathematician or a great physicist or anything, a great scientist. It doesn't matter what you yourself as a human being is. And he can learn it, and he can learn it well. Not in Christian Science. See, the student thinks, and perhaps it's also our way that we have been teaching it, which is not really the best way as we see it today, that we say, well, this science is a science that can be taught and that can be learned, and all what you have to do is really to study the letter and be exact in your reasoning, etc. And then they study and they read and they study and read and they study them hot and read them hot and then finally throw the textbook in a corner because they don't get the science. Why don't they get it? Because they are not graciously prepared to receive a revelation. Science is a revelation. That's what she said, you see. In the fourth chapter, she said that very clearly. She said, well, mortal existence is an enigma, but an enigma can be solved. How can it be solved? She said, only through revelation, through the revelation of truth, not through brain work. You can't get Christian Science through brain work. That's why we experience that over and over, that students are first attracted to this science, because it's a science and there is some logic in it and they can learn it and they get some kind of a method how to learn it, but they learn it and they learn it and they study it and they read it and they learn it and they study it and they read it and don't get it. After a few years, they are off. They are off somewhere because it doesn't sink in. It doesn't sink in. So that's why I put so much emphasis on those first five chapters. They are the preparatory ground, and so we must see that we don't neglect those chapters because they don't, so to say, explain the principle of being. In the sixth chapter, Mrs. Eddy does it. So this is a great lesson for us. It's a great lesson that we give enough thought also to prayer, also to atonement and Eucharist. What's the use of learning something, learning the letter of something, if you don't have within yourself a longing for it, an admiration for the subject, that standing in awe before that subject. Something within us must be of the nature that is impressed by the bigness and holiness of the subject, or else it cannot get it. Within us must be something that is willing, in the second chapter, to give up the material sense of things. Something in us must be willing to say, yes, I lay down the mortal for that spiritual sense of things. Yes, I am willing to give up this and that and the other because it's on the wrong side, it's on the sense of, it appeals to the material senses, to the personal sense, to the corporeal sense, to I don't know which wrong sense. We must give it up for the spiritual sense. And that is not always welcome. But we have to do it or else we are not preparing the ground. And so in marriage, as we have seen, that we use all our best human qualities which we already have and try to improve even those and have the always a higher and a higher and a still a higher sense of it. It's still a striving towards holiness, striving towards the spiritual, and not striving towards the material and the corporeal. And so in the fifth subject, we actually, at one point, comes the time where suddenly within us something says, is that reality what I do? Is that reality what I experience? Or is reality of a different nature? And there comes in what Plato already saw, that the reality is not really the illusion sense, the shadow universe, but that behind it is always an idea. And he already saw that behind the elusive universe is an ideational universe, and that ideational universe is the universe of reality. Therefore, all the new physicists of today go back to Plato because they come at the point where they begin to see that matter is just nothing, that matter is just an illusion, that they quantify matter, that there is something that lies behind it, namely ideas, and begin to study philosophy, and especially Plato. Yes, so we come to that point where we realize that only then, when we have been graciously prepared through the first five chapters, having in animal magnetism taken a stand, that we change our standpoint, and that the good only comes from mind and its infinite manifestation, then Mrs. Eddy was prepared for the discovery. See, a whole page and a half of the sixth chapter is about that preparation. Then, on the second page, she starts out, my discovery was what? My discovery was that mind is all, and that mind is all in all, and that reality is just mind, and mind's manifestation as idea, that's the only reality, and so she begins to tell us her discovery. This is beautiful. This is important for us, because then we know the way, and we know the steps to take, and not to leave out important steps, like that gracious preparation. Yes, so in that sixth chapter, she shows us really that we have here as an epitome, in science, we reason from God, and if we reason from God, she starts out with mind, because mind has to do with reasoning, has to do with the mind, the human mind, with reasoning, with logic, and so on. So she starts out that what she discovered as the first big thing is that being is mind, that mind is all, that mind is all in all. I repeat that already for the nth time, because I will repeat it until the end of this week, because we can see that's also the beginning of the natural scientist to realize that material science is nothing, is an illusion, that is not reality, and that behind that illusion lies a realm of mind, the mind of God. Yes. So, this is the very important point of this chapter, and shows then, from that standpoint, that science relates to mind. So we have a great exchange between science and mind, that science relates to mind, not to matter, that science is an emanation of the divine mind. Only when we have the divine mind as the only mind and the mind of all in all, we can really build up a science of it. Without having one mind, we cannot build a science. No divine science. That's not possible. And so she makes that terrific statement that all science is divine. Just four words. And this will revolutionize the whole world over the next hundred and many hundred years. A statement that is so true and so reasonable that if we want to have a science of that explains the world, and the world is the creation of what is called God, then, or mind, then we must see that mind alone can reveal a science.